Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Live Like an Athlete. I'm your host, Erin Sharoni. I am missing my partner in crime today, Big Herc. But fear not, we'll still have fun if you can tolerate me alone. And Herc will be back in full force next week. He's a very busy man, which means you guys actually will miss our banter, which you may or may not appreciate. Before we proceed, I got to get this out of the way. Because I don't have Herc to remind me, I'm just going to read our usual disclaimer. I want to remind everyone listening that in no way should this be considered as medical advice, a substitute for a professional opinion, etc. This is for your personal entertainment and edification only. Please advise a physician before beginning any exercise program or making any changes to your diet. All right, we got that out of the way. Last week, we spoke about how to monitor your health with various technological tools, looked at blood biomarkers. We spoke with the president of IMG, George Pine, about healthcare, even President Obama. We had a clip from him. So you should definitely head on over to iTunes, check out that episode if you haven't already. And obviously, this is my plug to tell you to subscribe, please. And that actually flows fairly nicely into this week's theme, what we discussed last week. Look, it's a hot topic. It's something that we're going to have to talk about on more than one show, but concussions in sports, we could go on forever and ever, and we have limited time in this podcast. You knew we were going to have to get to this topic eventually if we're talking about living like an athlete, because your brain is your most important tool in life, and it's a hot button issue for a number of reasons. You know, I like to relate things to current events. Obviously, we just got through March Madness, the start of baseball season, but we're going into NHL playoffs, and that's the connector here for this week's theme, because when you think about hockey, if you're a fan of the sport like me, you think of speed, you think of intensity, you think of that kind of rough, gritty play, and of course, you think of fighting. So with fighting comes a whole host of things. You rile the crowd up. You can rile up an opponent. It could be used to exact retribution for slighting a teammate. I kind of like that Greco-Roman aspect of it. But like in football, the physical violence exacts a price. And so that's why we're very lucky today to have a special guest. He is the man known as the Brain Doctor, Dr. Harry Karasidis. Harry, welcome.
Hi, Erin.
I should say Tikanis.
Oh, very good. Spoken like a true Greek.
Thank you. Yeah. It's one of the languages that I speak, which is kind of crazy and almost useless. But in the medical profession, you've got all those root words that are Greek root words, right?
Oh, yeah. Everything has to come back to the Greek root.
So it's useful. It's useful info. Harry, I'm just going to read a little bit of your bio so that folks know who they're going to be hearing from, because you have obviously an impressive background. Cognitive neurologist Dr. Harry Karasidis is one of only a few in the world specializing in the impairment of cognitive and emotional performance resulting from brain trauma and concussions. He co-founded XLNT Brain. After 25 years studying and treating hundreds of concussions, through his experience, Dr. Karasidis noticed a void in existing concussion treatment protocols, so he created his own, rivaling the NFL's concussion protocols, which has been incorporated into the XLNT Brain Sport, and is now available for all sports and all levels. So, you know, Dr. Karasidis, I sort of preface this by telling everybody that we could go on and on and talk about this for a really long time. But with you, I guess this is the first time we've had a neurologist, a concussion expert on the show. So let's just start at the ground floor and talk about, you know, every day we're hearing new reports about sports-related concussions. So why does this continue to become big news? And it's also big business.
Sure. So the element of concussion has been a part of sport since the inception of sport. But recent advances in medical science have raised our awareness of the consequences of the concussion. A concussion is a brain injury. So when one gets impact or even a spinning or rotational force to the skull, the brain inside is like the yolk of an egg. It's not fixed in any way, and it sloshes around inside and becomes damaged. It used to be that coaches and parents and even other athletes would encourage the injured athlete just to get back on his feet and go again, sort of calling it a ding or calling it getting your bell rung. And the athlete was just told to walk it off. But we're now finding that there are significant consequences to having such an injury to the brain, and that kind of advice is really the wrong advice.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the discussions that we here in the sports media are constantly having. I'm sure you've seen plenty of roundtable discussions and panels where you have former fairly successful athletes, whether from the NFL or the NHL, where, you know, these concussions are common. And like you said, they talk about in years prior, really not so long ago, yeah, your bell was rung and it was kind of like, you know, here's a pat on the butt, get back out there, son, and keep playing. And in fact, you know, there's been controversy even just this past NFL season where we'd seen guys get hit and then they were back in the game on the next play or the next quarter, right?
Exactly. And it's not limited just to football. You see this in all sports. One of the big ones this year was Hugo Lloris getting knocked out on the field. He was down for at least a few minutes, taken to the sidelines, and then returned to the game, which is against all recommendations of clinical guidelines at this point.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when we as spectators see it happen, we're not physicians. I mean, I think even a kid would sort of question that. That's like, if you fell down and scraped your knee, you wouldn't purposely try and scrape it again. It's just
exactly
making the injury worse.
So true.
Are there are more concussions happening today than before, correct?
Well, more are showing up in the emergency room. There's a sharp rise in emergency room visits for concussion injury due to sport and recreation. Part of it, I think, is raising awareness because, as you said, it's appearing more and more in the media. People are able to recognize the signs and symptoms more effectively and, as a result, are actually presenting to their doctor or to an emergency room for further care.
Yeah, and I mean, that's absolutely one aspect of it. We often see a rise in anything, really, once awareness is brought to it. But that said, how do you, as a physician, define a concussion? I love that you put it in layman's terms and you call it a, quote, brain sprain.
Right. The concept is similar, but not exact. If you sprain a ligament or sprain a muscle, there's significant tissue injury that goes on. And usually it recovers completely. Sometimes fast, sometimes it takes a long time, sometimes you have to immobilize the sprain, and all of these can be applied to concussion injury. The brain has significant disruption of the membranes of the brain cells, and they're struggling to regain their equilibrium, they're struggling to repair themselves, but at the same time, the glucose, the sugar in the bloodstream, is having a hard time getting into the cell to provide the energy required. So there's an energy crisis that's going on in the injured brain cells as they're trying to recover.
I actually wasn't even going to ask this question, but you just said something that sparked my interest because on our prior podcast, we've spoken to quite a few folks who are advocates of the paleo and primal diet lifestyle. You mentioned glucose and the brain using glucose. If you're in ketosis, for instance, which is something we've talked about previously for any of our listeners who've been listening, and the brain has switched over to using ketones for fuel, I'm just curious, does that have an impact? I know that there are some studies showing that ketosis, and for anyone who doesn't know, that's being on a very low carbohydrate diet where your brain switches its fuel source. I know that there have been some studies that have shown that that is helpful for the brain in the cases of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Is that helpful in the case of concussions or healing or even prevention?
Absolutely. In my own practice, I've noticed that nutritional supplements that increase ketone bodies in the bloodstream have been helpful in the recovery process. Of course, there's no scientific studies done specifically on concussion injury, but as you mentioned, there are other neurologic disease states which benefit from ketone body supplementation in order to provide energy to the cell. Ketones can provide up to two-thirds of the energy that is required by the brain cell. And when there's a difficulty getting the sugar into the brain cell, there it's very helpful to supply energy through another substance.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously not to get too off topic, but it's something that I've noticed myself once I switched over to that low-carb, high-fat, moderate protein diet, and I am in ketosis because I test myself every day, and my brain function, and granted I'm not recovering from a current concussion, but certainly my brain function throughout the day has just improved drastically. So I guess there's something to it. I'd definitely be interested in seeing if there's any studies in the future, but that's certainly...
Sure. Other sources of medium-chain fatty acids which are converted to ketone bodies include palm oil or coconut oil, or you can actually get nutritional supplementation of medium-chain fatty acids.
Yeah, I noticed that as I did increase my consumption of coconut oil, and I eat quite a bit of it every day, I even make coffee with it, that the ketone bodies increased when I tested myself every day, and my blood sugar lowered. So I guess that's good.
But absolutely.
Yeah, especially in case I do get a concussion again, which I'm prone to, which we'll talk about later. So that said, roughly how many concussions are occurring every year now? Because I think that would be an interesting stat, with which a couple of people had asked me on Twitter. And also, what athletes are most vulnerable to them? Because that, I think, will surprise a lot of people, because I know what you're going to say is the most vulnerable. So you go ahead.
So the CDC has done studies on this, looking at the incidence of concussion injury in sport and recreation. They estimate, or they've measured, about 300,000 sport or recreation-related concussions presenting to the emergency rooms each year. The CDC went on to say that this probably only represents about 10% of all the concussions because of underreporting. So you can think of over 3 million concussions occurring each year in sport and recreation. Yes, it is surprising as to what the most concussion-prone sports are. Some of them are not surprising. Of course, football is up number one in the United States. Worldwide, you can also start to include ice hockey and rugby as really dangerous concussion-prone sports. But in the United States, number two is girls' soccer in high schools. And the reason is for a few things. One is that in virtually any sport that girls and boys play the same sport, the girls' teams are more vulnerable to the concussion injury, probably because of thinner neck mass, so the head bobbles quite a bit more due to impact. Females are more migraine prone, and we know that migraines are susceptible prior history for concussions. And there may be some differences in the brain to skull ratio that makes the female brain a little bit more vulnerable to concussion injury.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I heard that statistic, I think, probably last year. So any soccer moms or soccer dads out there listening, or even future soccer parents, definitely pay attention to that, because I don't know that anyone would guess that after those guys in the NFL and the NHL, that it's girls' soccer that's most prone. And in fact, what surprised me also in looking at those statistics was it's a lot of youth sports, I think even basketball, right? I mean, there were so many that were quite surprising. And I guess it's the susceptibility, like you said, but just very interesting.
Yes. And it's not only basketball, but baseball. Softball is another big one. And of course, it doesn't have to be organized sports. Probably cycling accidents is one of the most common ER presentations for concussion injury.
Yes, or if you're like me, snowboarding without a helmet for multiple
years. Oh, boy, I can't believe you admitted that.
Yeah, well, I mean, in all fairness, it was when I was younger, and it was before this all this stuff came to light. Not an excuse, but, I think I got about, I don't know, probably 4 to 5 concussions over the course of my life. So pretty interesting. But I also thought it was interesting that you said that a history of migraines increases susceptibility to concussions. I had never heard that before, and I suffered from migraines from age 2 until age 13 quite severely. So they disappeared when I entered my teen years, but then I got a number of concussions. So I'm thinking, wonder if there was a correlation there. That's really interesting.
Absolutely. And also concussions beget concussions. So once you've had a concussion, you're more vulnerable to having more concussions if you continue the same sport. The boxers knew this from a long time ago, and they called the boxer having a glass jaw because they were so vulnerable to being knocked out once they had been knocked out a few times.
Sure, and that's something we see. You know, we mentioned the NHL, but you see that constantly. Those guys are always getting their bells rung, so to speak. And now, more than ever, I think it seems that they're kept off the ice even longer because of the understanding that if you did get a concussion of any severity in one game, getting another one a week or 2 or 3 or 4 weeks later is, compounds the problem much further and or makes you more susceptible to a new one, which is why these guys end up sitting out for weeks, sometimes even a whole season.
Absolutely. Your greatest vulnerability to repeat injury is within the first week. And that's really why we need to protect our athletes very carefully during the recovery process. In fact, there is a very serious outcome that can occur if you have a second concussion during the recovery period of the first one, and that's called second impact syndrome, which can be fatal.
Really?
Yes, 50% of second impact syndrome is fatal, and of the 50% survivors, 100% of them have long-term neurologic injury. It's a rare result of concussion injury, but it is a preventable one by just managing concussion properly.
Wow. Well, that said, actually, something that I did want to discuss with you before we move on to your protocol is the discussion in the sports world is always seems to come back full circle to this one question, and we're in sports here, so I'm going to ask you. And that's really, what do we do now, right? Short of completely altering the way that the NFL or the NHL games are played, do you see major rule changes coming? Do you think that it just lays in prevention? I mean, what do you think is going to happen, and what can be done reasonably?
Well, the big problem is that there is no way to absolutely prevent concussions. There are steps to be taken with regards to changing rules of particular games. Certainly, equipment makes a difference, and making sure that not only that you have the equipment, but it's a proper fitting equipment. These are major issues in prevention. But the sport should continue. I'm not a proponent of stopping these sports, just to make it safer for the athletes to play. The major issue, I think, is that athletes need to be informed properly. Mm-hmm. There has to be an element of informed consent with regards to the risks that are involved in playing. And that brings up a sort of ethical issue when you're talking about youth sports, because when the athlete starts to play in youth sports, it's really not the athlete that can make that informed consent decision. They're minors. And so it's the parents that are making those decisions for them. So it's really important that the parents understand the risks inherent in playing.
Absolutely. And the same for, in this case, in the professional sports cases, the stances of the various leagues. Obviously, there's been lawsuits recently. That's part of the reason why this conversation is in the forefront of sports, particularly when football is in season. So that ethical issue, I think, is absolutely something that needs to be constantly addressed. You also mentioned equipment, which brings me to, we have a couple of listener questions. A couple folks sent in questions via Twitter yesterday. And Dr. Jeff, at Dr. Jeff Lowe, is, I believe, an orthodontist, and he asks you, do mouth guards do anything to reduce the possibility of a concussion?
Well, the jury is still out completely on that one. There are several studies that have shown that the proper fitting mouth guards can absorb impact to the skull so that force is dissipated. And there are some studies that show that concussion severity or concussion incidence has been reduced with proper mouth guards. Research is still going on in this. So I think the ultimate decision on mouth guards is going to be forthcoming.
Let's get to your protocol in that case, since we're sort of touching on the subject. You've treated thousands of concussions, obviously, over many years. You're an expert in this space, and you have your own protocol. So what's missing in the area of treatment, and what have you done to sort of fill that void?
Well, up until now, the major thing that was missing was integration. What we had was a variety of different tools out there that were helpful in prevention and detection and even after concussion care that sort of hung out there by themselves. And the one thing that I felt needed to be done was to bring all these into a fully integrated, seamless concussion management program, which addressed the issues from end to end, from the beginning of the sports season all the way through to returning an injured athlete back to normal activity.
And what's your recipe, for lack of a better word, for recovering from a brain sprain?
Well, the major thing is rest, rest. That's the mantra, rest, rest, rest. What we're moving into, though, is that it's not necessarily absolute rest. What we want to do is have the athlete engage in as much activity as they can without provoking their concussion-related symptoms. To do this, you need to be able to monitor the symptoms very closely. So we've at Excellent Brain, we've developed the symptom checklist that can be entered by the athlete using their smartphone or using any internet-based computer on a daily basis to bring the signs and symptoms of concussion into a documented form for healthcare providers to be able to care for the athlete.
I just realized when you said it, Excellent Brain, and I was saying XLNT Brain because that's how it's spelled in caps, which I assume is an acronym for something.
Exactly. Well, it's Excellent Brain, XLNT Brain. Yeah. In fact, you can come to our website to learn more information about it, XLNTBrain.com. So yes, it's a contraction of excellent.
Absolutely. And we'll be sure to post both your Twitter link and your website link when we post the podcast. So everybody listening, if you didn't catch that right now, don't worry. You'll be able to find it when you're listening. I do want to get back really quickly before we go to, well, it's another listener question, but because we touched on ketones and nutrition previously, and we're talking about a recipe for recovering from a brain sprain. At JW Levitt, that's Jonathan Levitt, he asks you, what foods other than spirulina help brain health?
There are numerous nutritional supplements that the brain utilizes for metabolism and function. I generally go with the omega-3 fatty acids, the B-complex vitamins, free radical scavengers like vitamin E and CoQ10 are helpful as well.
Yeah, those are all the usual suspects that I would apply as well.
The brain health. Brain healthy.
Yes. Salmon and coconut oil are definitely staples in my diet, and they taste good too. I always ask our guests to sort of dig into their tool bag, or toolkit, as I call it, and leave our listeners with, you know, 1 to 3 pieces of advice, the things that they can do. And in this case, either maybe dangerous circumstances to avoid, or keys to prevention, or things to look out for. Just generally speaking, for the non-pro athletes out there, what are the takeaways that you would leave them with?
So I would go with the 4 R's of concussion management, and that is recognize, report, recover, and responsibility. Recognize by learning the signs and symptoms of concussion injury. Report, meaning don't hide it, be forthcoming. If you feel the symptoms of concussion injury, let somebody know about it. If you see a teammate who is suffering from concussion injury, then let somebody know about it so that proper care can be delivered. Recover in the sense of prioritizing brain health over gameplay is of ultimate importance. And then responsibility is a major component to the concussion management. Assigning the responsibility to a responsible person on the sidelines to be able to recognize and care for the concussed athlete.
I love it. That's good stuff. And in fact, you're writing a new book called Concussionology, Redefining Sports Concussion Management, which I assume relates directly to those 4 R's. Tell us when that's going to come out and who it's written for.
Well, it takes a village, to paraphrase, to care for a concussion. It takes the athletes, the parents of youth athletes, the coaches, the medical professionals. And so really, they are the ones that I'm aiming to reach out to. We hope to have the book available within about 6 months.
Awesome. I can't wait to read it. I'm sure it's going to be excellent, just like your excellent clinic.
Excellent, yeah.
That's right. Dr. Karasidis, thank you so much. You've been just a wealth of information, a phenomenal guest. We really appreciate having you on.
Thank you, Aaron. It was nice to be here.
And remember, everybody, you can check out more of the good doctor's work on his website. That's www.excellentbrain.com. He's also got that book coming out. Keep an eye out for it. You can also find him on Twitter, and I'm sure he would be happy to answer your questions there if we didn't get to them today. His Twitter handle is @excellentbraindoc. Easy enough. Thanks to everybody for listening. Remember to drop us a line at likeanathlete@cbsi.com with questions for future shows. We'll feature them. You can also tweet at us. Follow me on Twitter @AaronSharoni or our absent co-host who will be back next week, Big Herc. I know you miss him, @CBSHerc. And subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week. Keep that brain healthy.